Blog Talk Radio.
Shot in the arm, and now I'm going to give you another one while I try and get more time because I've only got 12 minutes left. I must have hit the wrong hour selection. So here I'm going to play you an oldie but a goodie that one day will be banned in the United States. You boys and girls, welcome to the Spirit of America party. We had an hour planned for you, but I'm trying to see if I can get my 10 minutes left extended, but it probably will fail. But in the meantime, I'll give you a quick bulletin. And the quick bulletin is I got an email from the RNC, from the new head of the RNC, and I sent him an email back. He told me all of the good things they're going to be doing for America. And so I sent him an email back. And this is what I said. Get rid of the Democrats in the RNC. Start with the Cauldron Sisters of Maine. Then go to Linseed Graham. Don't overlook any repuppy senator who voted with 40 Democrat senators to let the American flag burn. That means Mitch McConnell has to go. Get a big tea kettle. You like that? Okay. And then I went on to do some more blogging, and cross your fingers, and we'll see if we're going to get an hour here. One nation under God, not under Chinese house arrest, and I support the Fool Around Gang. Hey, Eric Holder, now that you rounded up the mafia, I mean, are these the guys we really need to be watching right now? I mean, maybe we should let them back into to organized crime. At least they would make the OTB pay off. How's that? The government took over OTB and they can't get better. They can't make money on horse racing. They can't make money on crime. And now they're gonna tax pot. Oh, I can just hear all the crybabies getting their tea leaves. Yeah. Oh my God. What a joke. Yeah. First we'll hook them and then we'll tax them. Isn't that what's happening to us? We are all a bunch of tax junkies. And you know what? They're gonna pay the bill. They're gonna pay that deficit off. And you know how they're gonna do it? It's coming out of you. It's coming out of me. They're not going to do it any other way. They're not cutting anything. They're giving you a little smoke and mirrors, as they say. They're giving you that old shell game. The shell's on a cantaloupe. And you still can't see it. Yeah. Oh, my God. We're in trouble. So Eric Holder has rounded up the mafia. Now that he's done that, hey, Eric, how about rounding up Al-Qaeda? How about going into these mosques where they're preaching kill America all day long and dragging them all out? Come on, Eric. Put your war face on. How about a war on drugs, except your product samples? I asked a college student today if his class says the Pledge of Allegiance. He laughed and he said, "Are you kidding?" I said, "Why not? Grammar school kids say it and the high school kids are trying to say it. Doesn't one flag fit all? If not, why not? Let me see your passport." Tom Maher is sitting in tonight for Mark Levin. He's a great guy. I like him already. Ex-Marine, and he's drinking a martini on the job. The Mike Savage Show was cut short tonight by Rutgers basketball, but WOR managed to get in the only disclaimer on talk radio. That's when they say, "Mike's views are not the view of the network." I'm surprised they don't add, "and he's banned in Britain." After Rutgers loses the game tonight, do they also use the same disclaimer? And Governor Christie appoints a jihadi to the bench. He's an alleged jihadi. You can't say he's a jihadi just because he belonged to Hamas. But Governor Christie, I wonder how much that seat cost. Ooh. Alleged. What's alleged? The cost or the seat? Yeah, you don't think money changed hands? Come on, man. You a big boy or what? You play with the big boys, you pay with the big boys. Yeah, he didn't get that seat for nothing. He didn't turn in his recyclables for the deposit. Yeah, there's something coming down the pike for Governor Christie. So anyway, he appointed an alleged jihadi to the bench, and now they have a new law in New Jersey. Any traffic fine over $50 is now punishable by death after bargaining. The bans of marriage are announced for the last time between Sultan Christie and Fatima, Jasmine, and Scheherazade O'Toole. Well, at least he did not meet them at a truck stop. That's what the old governor used to do. Used to have the state troopers bring him to meet his lovers at truck stops. You could be a lover. Just got to go to the men's room. "And I'm coming out of the closet." No, you're not. You're coming out of the men's room. Yeah. And I'm giving up my throne. Yeah. To be with the trucker I love. Oh, God. Help us all, man. We're all up the fat lady's burka. Tonight we were supposed to talk about communist infiltration of all American ways of life, including the church, including the schools, including organized crime. We're doing Red Cocaine, which is a book that was written in the 60s, and we're between chapters 8 and beginning 9. Chapter 8 is Cuba, and chapter 9 is the silent majority of dopers. Do you realize how much money we waste just on rehab? Rehab should be 40 years in the desert with a bottle of water. Yeah. Oh, yeah. How about take a little guilt with you, too? We can have guilt for the American Revolution. We're sorry we broke away from Britain. We should have let them store troops in our house. Yeah. And nobody should have had a rifle at Bunker Hill. There should have been a gun law. Oh, man. We are in trouble. Let me check and see if I got more time. If not, we'll do a tune in. I'm saying sayonara. So let me just check. Bear with me while I... Hey, we got 47 minutes. We're on, baby. We're on. That's like the governor giving me a reprieve. Yeah, now when the governor calls and gives you a reprieve, you have to say shukran. Okay. We'll give you a tune, and then we'll open up with... here's one. I'm going to play you a pro-life tune. You want to hear a pro-life tune? This one you gotta play at all Democratic conventions.
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. I can see it, your face is glowing. I can see it in your eyes, I'm happy in knowing that you're having my baby. You're the woman I love, and I love what it's doing to you. Having my baby, you're a woman in love, and I love what's going through you. The need inside you, see it showing. Oh, the seed inside you, baby, do you feel it growing?
Suicides at the Democratic convention after that song is played, or would they make everybody listen to Hillary Clinton sing Stand By Your Man? Or Stand On Your Man, whichever comes first, right? Unbelievable. They were talking about sissifying up the military, and they were talking about the women on submarines. And I told you, I'll say it again, I have a picture of a sub, and there's a tugboat pulling alongside the sub, and there's a guy and a girl on the bow of the tugboat, and they have a loudspeaker, and somebody's calling out from the conning tower. Seaman Feldman, can you come out of the torpedo room with Seagal Peaches? Your wife is here with her divorce lawyer. Yeah, and now it's really bad. You know, they're talking about all the pregnancies on aircraft carriers. You know what's coming next, don't you? A craft as big as an aircraft carrier has room for an abortion clinic. Don't think that's not going to be tried. You wait and see. You wait and see. Okay, so we are reading Chapter 8, Cuba and the Rise of Narco-Terrorism. And we don't have enough drugs, so Fernando Obama is opening up the doors to Havana so we can buy the drugs direct now. We can bypass the Colombian cartel and the Mexicans. We can buy our drugs cheaper from Cuba. And that's what he's doing. He's opening up the door to spread more communism to he's affecting he is the catalyst for the communist expansion of Latin America. The president of the United States. Are we in trouble? And I heard Savage tonight, he played a question and answer period where a newsman asked Obama, how can you coddle up to the Chinese when you know what they've done to the Chinese people? And he was concerned about the oppression of the Chinese people by the Chinese communist rulers. And Obama said, well, you know, China has a different kind of government, just like the one, and I'm going to ad-lib, just like the one you're going to get. That's what he really meant to say. So here we go. In 1988, the role of Cuba in drug trafficking was, this goes back to 1928, Mao Zedong started growing opium again in China, okay? And he called it the Second Boxer Rebellion and given it back to the whites who brought, who hooked the Chinese people on opium. And so back in 1928, they were getting ready to build a tremendous drug market. It's better than car production. In 1988, the role of Cuba in drug trafficking was confirmed by Major Antonio Meunier, a Cuban intelligence officer who defected in January 1987. He elaborated that the Cuban government, this is the same Cuban government, by the way, that Obama is embracing right now, his brothers, my brother communists. That's, brother has got a new meaning now. He elaborated that the Cuban government participated both directly and indirectly in narco trafficking, and that special troops of the Interior Ministry were used to coordinate operations. Rodriguez quoted the chief of the DGI, General German Barrero, as saying the drugs are the best way to destroy the United States, and they have. They have. You can go to any emergency room on a Friday, Saturday night. That's when it's busy. And you see what drugs has done to America. Or go sit in a police station and see what drugs has done to America. Their primary target was American youth, and they got them all. They got them all. If you got a kid that's not doing drugs, you got a saint living in your house. By undermining the will of American youth to resist, the United States could be destroyed without firing one bullet. The foundation of any army is the youth, and he who is able to morally destroy the youth destroys the army. In 1989, Rodriguez repeated his charges and confirmed that Aspilaga had said, namely, the drug operations could not have been carried out without Raul and Fidel Castro's personal approval. He added that Fidel is not doing that only for money. His philosophy is to use anything to destroy the United States. For example, drugs are regarded as the best way to destroy American society without troops or guns because the younger people are the future leaders. And you see what we got now in Congress? they're old timers now, but they all used to be woodcrap people and draft dodgers. The day you elected a president who was a draft dodger was the day you lost your country. And he's selling you out every day of the week. And Jimmy Carter couldn't even save his own embassy in Iran. Yet Ross Perot went into Iranian jails and got his people out. The best way to destroy American society without troops or guns, because the younger people who are the future leaders, and what they do with Ross Perot, they made him out to be crazy and his daughter was crazy. And that's what they do, just like they're doing to Sarah Palin. It's an old communist tactic. And you might as well give up the word Democrat and replace it with communist, because that's what you got in the Democrat Party. There is no Democrat Party. The last real Democrat was Harry Truman. If they are drug addicts, then they are very weak. What is especially noteworthy about such statements, of course, is that they precisely reflect a Soviet drug strategy. In March of 89, two Colombian drug dealers pleaded guilty to smuggling cocaine into Florida through Cuba. Videotaped evidence included conversations on how the Cuban military and civilian officials aided the traffickers. Ronaldo Ruiz and his son Ruben are shown telling a DEA informant how Cuba guarantees the success of cocaine loads run through the island and how the money is paid for the service goes to Fidel. Fidel, I hear, is worth $670 million, yet he dragged the students out of universities to cut sugarcane for nothing because he is a man of the people. And he was going to call for elections months after he took office. And you know what? They'll do it to you, too, if you don't have a gun. Besides Colombia, Cuba has already been closely linked with Panama, Nicaragua, and drug trafficking and gun running. They go together. In the case of Panama, Noriega was indicted in 88. The indictment named 15 others directly tied Noriega to Colombia's Medellin cartel. Following the indictment, the U.S. government tried to force Noriega out of office. Suddenly, there emerged a flood of information on Noriega's questionable activities. Drug trafficking was the first of these, and this had been the case extending as far back as 1970. Gun running was the second, and not just to non-communist dissident forces, but to terrorists and communist revolutionaries. This data also extended back to the early 70s, when that crazy woman in California, what's her name, Sarah Lee, accused the CIA of doping up the black community and giving them guns. She should have been accusing the communists, but she wouldn't accuse a fellow traveler. But the activity of greatest concern, and oh, by the way, she wants medical insurance for students up to 26 to be paid by their parents. What is this? What is this? When I turned 18, my mom shook my hand and said, "You're on your own, son." And up to then, I was paying room and board. I was paying room and board when I was 13 years old. And everybody I knew that wanted to go to college paid their own way. There was no gravy train. There was no Future Generations Fund. Dad made $60 a week. And you want to go to college? All the power to you, son. How are you going to do it? Work days? Go to school at night? Graduate in 6 years? Or go nights? Yeah, go days and work nights, or go nights and work days. And that's how it was done. And if, let me tell you, if you were 26 years old and you weren't self-sufficient, they would put you down. They would put you to sleep. Unbelievable. And here we're going to pay Medicare for 26-year-olds? Harry Truman had to leave his business to go back and work a farm for 10 years because his dad got sick. Dad's worked 2-3 jobs. But the activity of greatest concern appears to have been Noriega's growing links to Cuba and Cuban operations in Panama. Noriega had allowed Cuban intelligence to set up several hundred bogus corporations in Panama to circumvent the U.S. trade embargo against Cuba. Let me tell you something about trade embargoes. The only one who benefits, the only one who doesn't benefit from the trade embargo is us. Everybody else goes around it. We had a trade embargo with Iraq. We were the only ones that honored it. Everybody else was bypassing it, going around. When we finally took Baghdad and we got the list of all of the people that were getting oil for food contracts, and the food never came, but the money went in 6 different directions, the names of all of those recipients and all the end runners was never released because we would lose our coalition. our coalition of our allies. We don't have any allies. Let me tell you that right now. And if you think you got allies now, wait till they find your allies find out you're broke. You're going to find out. You'll be lucky if they leave you with your shoes. Cuban intelligence set up several hundred bogus operations to run against the American trade embargo. Panama became a conduit for theft by the Soviet bloc of U.S. high technology, which we now see on the runway in China. Even more serious was the growing Cuban military presence, which involved the shipment of weapons by Cuba, automatic rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, hand grenades, and ammunition into Panama, and often through Panama to revolutionary forces in other Latin American countries. Guerrilla and special forces training given to Noriega's military, referred to as dignity battalions. Cuban commando units, which were reported to have been conducting limited attacks on U.S. military installations in Panama. For example, Howard Air Force Base was the target of an assault April 12, 1988, and Cuban military advisors and intelligence support officials, whose numbers U.S. officials estimated to be between 30 and 50, although one defector put it at 3,000. So when we finally intervened in Panama in 1989, it would seem that far more impetus was provided by the need to bring an end to the growing military presence of Cuba. Cuba! And when they hijacked Ilian Gonzalez, the Kennedys had a love boat ready to go to Havana. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. One day we're all going to be ashamed to be Americans. Then to the assistance Noriega was providing to drug traffickers and money launderers. The drug business provided the rationale to remove Noriega, but the growing potential of Cuban and Soviet control mechanisms in Panama, until Jimmy Carter gave the Panama Canal to China, which now runs the Panama Canal. And wait till what's his name? What's that Chinese guy's name? Column B. What's Column B? Wait till Column B says, you know, this money you give us here, this money no good. We got 900 billion of this crap. We don't want this money no more. What do you got? You got oil wells? Okay, we'll take them. You're not using them. We take them. What do you got? You got farms? Oh, yeah. You got eggs? You got chickens? Oh, yeah, we take them. We take them. You're not using them. We take all the farms that used to belong to the little guy. When the United States finally intervened in Panama, it would seem, I said that already, the drug business provided the rationale to remove Noriega. But the growing potential of Cuban and Soviet control mechanisms in Panama, you know what's happening to this country? Half of the country doesn't know what's going on. And I want me to tell you which half? It's going to break my heart to tell you, but the women don't know. The women don't know what's going on in this country. Only a handful. You know why? They don't want to know. They got enough headaches as it is. They, every time you watch a woman when she turns on the TV and she sees a military action, turns it right off, turns her head. She don't want to know about it. She don't want to look at it. We're in trouble. And when somebody like Sarah Palin comes along who can ride and shoot, everybody says she's different. She's a weirdo. When the United States finally intervened, okay, I said that already, the importance of Panama is obvious. Here's the importance of Panama. I never realized it either, but Teddy Roosevelt did. Panama occupies a geostrategic position of exceptional importance, which may well explain why Panama was one of the first targets for the Soviet, Czechoslovak, Cuban drug trafficking expansion into Latin America. And Savage does take credit for stopping the Dubai ports deal, where the Arabs were going to run our ports. And well, does Spain own the Garden State Parkway? I never got the answer to that. I heard they were buying it. I don't know if the governor sold it to them. It's wonderful, isn't it? A country that used to make everything makes nothing now. Three ships a week out of Brooklyn. The German subs couldn't sink them fast enough. They could sink two. One got through. When the United States, I said that already, the importance of Panama is obvious. Evidence was also surfaced concerning drug and narcotics trafficking. Every time your kid buys a joint, he's taking a piece out of his country. And that's another thing. We're buying all this Chinese crap. We're getting a Tupperware from China, and they're taking the dollar for the Tupperware, and they're putting it in 30 new submarines. And you know, one day those submarines are going to kill American boys. But you're not going to worry about that because your son's not going to be in the service. You'll send him away to another country. Which one? You think they want him? They'll probably pass a law. No American loses. Evidence also surfaced concerning drugs. Antonio Farach, former minister counselor to the Nicaraguan embassies in Venezuela and Honduras, by James Herring, an American who assisted the government of Nicaragua in establishing cocaine production and transportation. He should get two behind the ear. One day we're going to have to put out a we're going to have to make a deal with the mafia to take the country back. And just hope they're not communist. By Ubay Adeka, a European hashish trafficker who dealt with Nicaraguan officials in establishing trade routes for Nicaraguan drug trafficking into Europe, and by Alvaro Jose Valdizon Aviles, an official in the Nicaraguan Intelligence Service. Antonio Farach's first knowledge of the Nicaraguan drug trafficking materialized in 81 when he learned that Raul Castro, who Obama will be giving neck hickeys to, had visited Nicaragua in September that year and had met Humberto Ortega. I wonder if Obama, Eric, the bag holder, is rounding up all these mafia guys, I wonder if Obama is going to tell them to lay off the communists from Latin America who are moving product. The visit signaled the beginning of a new and special business relationship. Farach deduced from other information that Cuba had offered to guarantee in a reasonable and safe manner the entry of the Nicaraguan government into drug trafficking. When asked whether Castro offered or ordered the Nicaraguans entry into the drug product business, Farach could not state which, but he did say that the relationship between the two countries was never one of respect. The Cubans always spoke as if they were the bosses. They were always very arrogant and demanding. They do not suggest in Nicaragua, they order in Nicaragua. Valdizon, a former Nicaraguan counterintelligence officer, confirmed the arrogant role of Cuban advisors in the Nicaraguan intelligence and military services. The presence of Cuban advisors and instructors was pervasive. Their mission was to provide substantive advice to implement security systems and methods employed in Cuba to support the Nicaraguan leadership in the planning and execution of combat operations, to oversee ideological development to ensure close coordination, and to prepare war plans. The Cuban influence on decision-making in the ministry is virtually complete, and Cuban advice and observations are treated as though they were orders. Cubans operated out of the Cuban mission also performed counterintelligence role in Nicaragua. Other advisors and technicians identified by Baldizón were from East Germany, North Korea, Bulgaria, and the USSR. So you know that North Korea operates with the blessings of Russia and China. Similar observations were provided in 1988 by Major Aspilaga, who described the Marxist Sandinistas as being under Castro's complete control. In particular, he described communication intercepts from 1980 in which Castro ordered the Nicaraguan defense minister, Humberto Ortega, to arrange for his brother, Daniel Ortega, to assume the post of Nicaragua's political leader so that Humberto could maintain control of the armed forces. So we sat around while all these Latin American countries were being infiltrated by the communists, and we did nothing because we treated them as banana republics, and now we got them all as immigrants. He also said that the Cubans were training Nicaraguan Sandinista agents and performing counterintelligence work. Moreover, a key intelligence official in the Interior Ministry of Nicaragua is a Cuban who married a Nicaraguan woman but who still works for Cuban intelligence. What kind of a marriage do communists have? Where do they go? Additionally, who marries them? Additionally, Colombian drug traffickers met Raul Castro regularly in Cuba. Raul is Fidel's right-hand man for all clandestine operations. He's probably going to be more dangerous than Fidel. And Fidel viewed the drugs as a very important weapon against the United States because drugs demoralize people and undermine society. So all you potheads out there, just remember that one day you're going to be demoralized and you're going to undermine society. But you don't think that. You don't believe that. You're in control of the situation, right? Well, how come you have to have another one? The nature of Cuban advisors in Nicaragua, as described by Farach Baldizón and Aspilaga, appeared to be remarkably similar to the nature of Czechoslovak advisors in Cuba in the early 60s, who launched the Soviet takeover with the Cubans. In line with this, one should suspect that half of the Cuban advisors and instructors in Nicaragua might well have been Soviets operating under Cuban cover, and that the real Cubans present were probably recruited and trained by the Soviets and now operated as Soviet intelligence agents. This might help to explain the arrogance observed by Farach and Baldizón. When Farach asked other Nicaraguan officials why their revolutionary government should become involved in drug trafficking, he was told, in the first place, drugs did not remain in Nicaragua. They were destined for the USA. Our youth would not be harmed, but rather the youth of the United States, the youth of our enemies. They do a lot of drugs in college? I bet you they do. They even have date rape drugs. Isn't that wonderful? And then you go to the abortion clinic. Yeah. We're morally straight. You know, we couldn't pass a Boy Scout test at any level. The second reason he was given was, in addition to a political weapon against the United States, drug trafficking produced a very good economic benefit, and that's why our government wants to get into it. Again, in a few words, we wanted to provide food for our people with the suffering and death of the youth of the United States. And I know casualties, and I've been through that heartbreak. I know casualties, and when I say one junkie brings down five innocent people, I know what I'm talking about. I'm talking from experience. Nicaragua's partition in drug and narcotics trafficking into the United States sprang from Raul Castro's meeting with Humberto Ortega. The narcotics operation itself was placed under the Nicaraguan Intelligence Service with Thomas Borge, the Minister of Interior and the head of the Intelligence Service in charge of the operation, and his deputy, Federico Vaughn, the chief of staff. Federico Vaughn was indicted in 1986 in the U.S. District Court, Southern District of Florida, along with Carlos Later, the Ochoa family, Pablo Escobar Gaviria, and others on 24 counts of producing and smuggling cocaine into the United States, conspiracy, obstructing justice, and related crimes. James Herring, an American who was recruited by Robert Vesco for various nefarious tasks, has described how he was introduced to Nicaraguan and Cuban government officials and his work in drugs and high-tech smuggling. Drugs and high-tech smuggling. He made a total of 4 trips to Cuba, 4 trips to Nicaragua. He was always escorted and treated very well by dignitaries from both governments. Ubi Deca is a cover name for a European who was a prominent Interpol fugitive, an international narcotics trafficker. His true identity is concealed for security reasons. When he was asked if the trafficking was not really just the work of a few corrupt officials, Decker responded, completely doubtful, it's impossible. It is the total Cuban government that Obama is now going to romance. He's going to put on a sombrero and he's going to sit underneath Fidel Castro's window and play his guitar and serenade him. The Cuban government provided security facilities, manpower, in short, everything, and there was a direct linkage between Cuba and Nicaragua. You know, Kennedy was a president that was assassinated, but these people have assassinated an entire country. Valdezón's debriefing by U.S. officials was particularly revealing. From 1982 until his defection in 1985, Valdezón was the chief investigator of internal abuses within the Ministry of Nicaragua. In 1984, Valdezón's office received reports linking Interior Minister Thomas Borge with cocaine trafficking. Valdezón was instructed to investigate this as a compromise of a state secret. He thought this was a mistake because he could not believe his government was involved in narcotics trafficking. Thus, he went to the chief of his office, Captain Charlotte Baltodano Egna, and asked her if the matter should not be investigated as a slander against the minister. Baltodano was taken back and said that the office should not have received the report. The fact that Borge had involved the government in narcotics trafficking was highly classified, she explained, and known in the ministry only to Borge. His assistant, Frederick Vaughn, the chiefs of police and state security, and to her. Outside the ministry, it was known only to members of the FSLN National Directorate. Baldazon was also provided additional details concerning Borge and cocaine trafficking and the use of money for mounting clandestine operations by the Intelligence and State Security Department outside Nicaragua. Is one thing you're noticing here as I read this to you, and I'm noticing it myself. You notice that all of these people have a lot of secret police and a lot of control freaks. God help you if this happens in this country. And they got a lot of role models. In 1987, another high-ranking official defected to the U.S., Major Roger Miranda Bengochea. Bengochea. I've heard that name twice. Bengochea is in the military. He's a good guy. Miranda was also confirmed the Nicaraguans' involvement in drug trafficking. He reported how one day the defense minister, Humberto Ortega, told him that trafficking was Borge's operation, and he added, it's a way of waging war on the United States, and it also provides a profit. The destabilization potential inherent in the corruption which accompanies drug production, trafficking, and money laundering may be even more dangerous and damning than the social problems caused by drugs because it provides the foundation for revolution and takeover. That is why narco-terrorism has its primary impact. with the narcotics operations sabotaging law, order, economics, and societal cohesion. When the situation has sufficiently deteriorated, the revolutionary terrorists can proceed to overthrow the government. The destabilization process was described in 1985 by John Thomas, Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics Matters, U.S. Department of State, as follows. The traffickers, in fact, may have killed their golden goose. They have polluted their own countries with their drugs, now added to the incentives for controls, and the undermining of economies, the erosion of public institutions, the corruption of law and order, the violence and the threats of narco-terrorists and insurgent groups who capitalize on the drug trade, and the destabilization of governments. In one sense, Thomas is absolutely correct. However, there is another dimension, namely that these incentives, which contribute to destabilization, are not unwanted results, but rather desired objectives. They are not killing the golden goose. They are building a revolutionary base for their own golden goose. Nor is this where the story ends, because there is an even more important dimension in his testimony. Thomas was addressing the situation in Latin America, but what is happening is not limited to Latin America. It is happening around the world, including the United States. The United States was the richest country in the world and the major source of money, so therefore the greatest target. I once crossed the bridge from Bahrain to Saudi Arabia, and when I got my toll receipt, on my toll receipt was stamped these words in English: the penalty for drugs is death. But you know what? They have rehab units in Saudi Arabia because princes bring it in diplomatic pouches. And if your father's the king, it's very hard for him to kill the prince. The breakdown of law and order is especially evident in those U.S. states most closely associated with drug trafficking and money laundering. For example, Florida, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. A prime example of the erosion of police capabilities for a time was evident in Washington, D.C., where the police frankly admitted they were outgunned. On March, look at, they had a mayor in Washington, D.C., didn't they? He got caught in a crack cocaine pipe-smoking bust on videotape, and he used the video to run for re-election. On March the 24th, 1989, Police Chief Maurice Turner said that the police could do little about the escalating homicide rate other than wait until local drug dealers finished carving up the city into markets. This echoes the sentiments of police in now more than a dozen major cities. In a special report this is 20 years ago, on growing anarchy within urban America, U.S. News and World Report concluded that combat-like conditions exist in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, Miami, Cleveland, New Orleans, East St. Louis, Detroit, Chicago, Atlanta, Houston, Dallas, Oakland, and Los Angeles. The challenges and human frailties that give rise to these problems are not limited to Latin America. They exist everywhere, the United States being, of course, no exception, which is another reason why drug trafficking is more serious than public and official government perceptions of the problem allow. They won't allow it because they can't face it. They know it's there. They know they got the problem, but they won't get elected. We're up to Chapter 9. In Chapter 9, let me just take a sip of my Kickapoo Joy Juice. I got this radio, when you knock it over, it plays. And when you hit the off button, it doesn't work. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Throughout the 1950s, Henry Anslinger, the U.S. Commissioner of Narcotics, worked hard to make people recognize that Communist China was a primary force. Well, who is he having dinner with tonight? You think they'd be smoking the pipe? No charge. I just seen a blog where somebody gave Obama, the former Prime Minister of England, the half a commie, he gave Obama $15,000 worth of gifts when he came. Isn't that great? The mafia, he explained in response to misleading press reports, was not the biggest drug dealer. This was a false impression. By far, the biggest drug dealer was Peking. And I just about 6 months ago, they caught a ship unloading in my neck of the woods from China, and there was all kinds of cocaine on it. Anslinger provided extensive data to the United Nations and to the U.S. Congress. He identified the Chinese government agencies that were involved, as well as numerous trafficking routes out of China through North Korea and Southeast Asia into Japan, the Philippines, Hawaii, Alaska, Mexico, and the United States. You know what? I'd like to do a survey. I'd like to ask every small town in America if they could put up a sign that says, "Welcome to Drug Free," and the name of the town. And I'll bet you there's not one that can do it. But while he was unable to stop the flow, at least he did identify the source of the offensive, Communist China. Then in the, this is in the 1950s. Then in the early 60s, something happened. In a study of Chinese narcotics trafficking, Stefan Apolsiny observed, beginning in the early 60s, the subject Chinese drug offensive against the United States, which originally had attracted great attention, became an unsubject, to paraphrase Orwell. In a detailed analysis of the problem, A.H. Stanton Candlin observed the same phenomena, which he explained is the following terms. The matter was handled differently until 1962, before which year the United States showed signs of official comprehension of the problem. Since then, the threat has apparently been concealed from the public by persons who have evidently had the desire to cultivate better relations with the Red Chinese. So here's the culmination of the better relations now. In your face. The Chinese are the principal miscreants in this criminal conspiracy, and they have been able of late to obtain protection and support in unexpected quarters. And if you had to do a root canal, a lot of politicians would be committing suicide. It is perhaps no mere coincidence that 1962 is the year in which Henry Anslinger retired, and that in 1961, the pro-China interest moved into the State Department. I would scuttle that State Department. I would give it to John Bolton, say, hire all new people. And how do you survive in a corrupt department? How do you stay jam tight and jelly free? And how do you get anything done? When it was decided to encourage overseas investment in China, in 1969, President Nixon declared war on drugs. One of his first measures taken was to identify the sources of the problem. In one instance, analysts at the Central Intelligence Agency began looking at drug trafficking emanating from Southeast Asia. Drawing on a massive amount of detail from a wide spectrum of sources, the first map of the Golden Triangle, then regarded as the main source of drugs and narcotics. The triangle included parts of Thailand, Burma, Laos, and especially Yunnan Province, China, as shown by the solid line triangle in Figure 2. And they got Burma, North Vietnam, In North Vietnam. Interesting. Okay, so the triangle included parts of Thailand, Burma, Laos, and Yunnan Province, China. The northeast tip of the triangle was located well up in Yunnan Province near Kunming. Yunnan Province was indeed a dominant source, but in its own right and through its control of and assistance to operations in northern Burma and Thailand. As the CIA Far East specialist who constructed the map described the position, the triangle was really a golden V, the apex of which was in the region where Thailand, Burma, and Laos came together. Most of this area, the funnel of the V, was in Yunnan Province. We're down to 2 minutes. I'm going to break off. This is chapter 9, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. If I enlighten you with one sentence, I'd be a happy camper. So, I'm leaving you with a tune. We've got 2 minutes left.
Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon, 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 blue moon, dip, 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 moon, 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 blue moon, dip, 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 bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong,
blue moon, you saw me standing alone.
Dang it, dang, dang, ding it on.
Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really didn't care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms would ever.
Dang it, dang, dang, ding it, on, ding, boo.
Oh, 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 oh,
dang it, dang, dang, ding it, on, ding, boo. Boom, boom, boom. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue.